I think we're going to get started in 1 second. Okay, I'd like to thank all the Talmidim for joining us. This is our fourth installment of Through the Eyes of Our Rebbeim. And I really want to take this opportunity to thank Rabbi Rosenzweig, Rabbi Mori for joining us so late at night and joining all the Talmidim so late at night. And of course, for Rabbi Turetsky, waking up at the crack of dawn, literally, from Eretz Yisrael to join us in this very special venue. We're always looking for opportunities to learn from our Rebbeim, to be inspired from our Rebbeim, to understand life lessons. And this venue is a little bit different than what we normally get in terms of shmuzim and shiurim in the shiur, in the yeshiva. So this is a special opportunity for all of us to learn from our Rebbeim. And we want to thank all the Talmidim for joining, and of course, Rabbi Rosenzweig and Rabbi Turetsky. I will turn over the mic now to Rabbi Turetsky. This is his show, and to Rabbi Rosenzweig. And Mirtz Hashem, we look forward to a wonderful evening.
First of all, really a thank you to Rabbi Bacon for the opportunity. It is one that I'm very excited about. I'm certainly looking forward to the pleasure of being able to interview and ask questions to Rosenzweig. I'm blessed with an infant daughter that I guess functions as an alarm clock in the morning. So this was not as big of a challenge as I guess in other circumstances maybe would have hoped that it would be. And it's really something which I'm very, very excited about. I had the pleasure of for really many years to learn, I would say, actively under Rosenzweig, both in Shir and then in the Kol Elyon. And it's the Torah that I learned then continues to very, very much impact the Torah that I learn now and teach. As recently as yesterday, had this chus of quoting a Rosenzweig and Shir. And I think beyond the Torah that I learned, which was so impactful, I think the opportunity to be exposed to a certain kind of ambition and a certain kind of drive and a particular worldview, it's been something which for me has did play and continues to play a dominant role in so many of the decisions that I make and so many of the perspectives, at least that that really animate and impact so much of what I know I do here. And again, over the years, Rosenzweig has continued to play such a major role. And it's really a wonderful, wonderful zchus. The first question that I would ask, just to frame things a little bit, I think my first semester in YU, I had the pleasure of taking Rosenzweig's father for Jewish history, for medieval Jewish history. And the class started at 3 o'clock. And I remember, and I was told in advance that, you know, things may go late a little bit with Shir. And it's possible that you're going to come, you know, a couple minutes late. And I was told that Rosenzweig's father always started on time. He would start with attendance. He wanted to make sure everybody was there. And I remember, and I'm positive I'm not the only one that had this experience. I remember walking into the Jewish history class a little bit late. And Rosenzweig's father asked, you know, how come you're late? Where were you? And when I said, well, Shir, Mincha went a little bit late. And he said, who Shir are you in? And I said, in a Rosenzweig Shir. His father would respond with a smile I mean this, you know, seriously, for me is an enduring symbol of Nachas. It was a beautiful, beautiful smile. And to see the pride which Rosenzweig had in his son was something which was really remarkable. I guess the first question that I have is, what role in a direct Talmud Torah sense did Rebbe's father play in his own sort of Talmud Torah development? Was there a lot of learning together when Rebbe was younger? Was there a lot of active encouragement? Was it something that was more of a tone that got set in the house? And I guess what role did Rebbe's father play in his own development from a Talmud Torah perspective?
First of all, let me welcome everybody as well. Let me thank Rav Turetsky for participating in this. It's always just very good to see him. We didn't really have any advanced opportunity to collude, I guess. I'm not sure if they usually do that or not, but I wasn't very concerned about it. But it's a special schus for me that I have, you know, from the very beginning of my teaching, till, you know, Yamenu Anu, you know, since, you know, we talked about yesterday. So, you know, my current Talmidim, many of whom I see are also here. I've had, the very major schus of having wonderful Talmidim who are interested and interested also in Vishinanta Levanecha and the relationships that should develop over Talmud Torah. We'll speak in a moment about my, you know, you asked me about my father, Irene Kaparis Mishkavo. So I'll speak about that in just a second. But just to welcome everybody, to welcome Rav Turetsky in particular, who is really a special Talmud, who gives me a great deal of nachas also from, you know, for the shiurim and the Talmidim that he is involved with. And now we share Talmidim. I said this about a week ago in another context about Rav Nussbacher, but Baruch Hashem, there are a whole bunch of, you know, in Yeshivat Shaldim, but in the other yeshivot too, in Akotel and Keren B'Avna and Yeshivat Haratzion and some of the American programs as well in Eretz Yisrael and, of course, here. In the yeshiva and in other places in America, other cities. I've been zocha to have really wonderful Talmidim who, you know, became Rabbeim and are Mashpia. And many times we also share Talmidim. So it's a source of great nachas. So just I want to thank him. I feel badly that he has to wake up so early. I was wondering about that myself. But, you know, it's good to see him and looking well and doing well. And, you know, since his alarm clock is part of his own Vishinanta Levanecha, so that's good as well. With respect to, first of all, I appreciate you, you know, mentioning my father. His picture actually happens to be over my shoulder, a special picture that was in his house and that I, you know, was always very fond of. My father liked to start on time. Well, just to know the anecdote. Because he was very professional in what he did. He really believed that, you know, teaching Jewish history was a, first of all, he had a lot of dignity and pride in anything that he did. And that, I think, is a Musar Haskel in its own right. He did whatever he did with always in a context of preparation and always in a professional way and in a way which reflected his regard for his, respect. You know, for the people who were listening to him, whether it was in the shul or in the yeshiva. So he, you know, he really liked when people showed up on time. And, you know, I heard a lot about, you know, the fact that I was the cause of people coming late. But he was he did have a lot of nachas from all of his children, myself included. And that definitely overrode, you know, his desire, you know, to start on time. But really the reason that in addition to being professional and having respect for his audience and so on, is that he perceived his, you know, position of teaching Jewish history in the yeshiva as, you know, kind of, as a Talmud Torah, really, task. My father's view is not what you're asking me now, but I'll just say, since you mentioned the anecdote, my father's view was that Jewish history was a reflection of Hashgachas Hashem. And therefore that knowing it and being sensitive to its twists and turns, you know, was part of Emunah. And therefore, you know, he felt that what he was involved in, not only he loved history as it happens and Jewish history, but he really perceived it as an extension of his Rabbanus, you know, and his persona as somebody who was Marbitz Torah. So that's another reason why he liked to start on time. But I guess he perceived, I don't know whether he would agree with this formulation, but the way I always see it, he saw it as kind of an internal clash, you know, since the people were coming late from Mashiach. And the truth is that he also knew of the precedent. You know, when I was a student and we were all, those of us who were in the Rav Shir, always came late on Thursday to Tanakh. And there were some of the Tanakh, you know, professors who, I should say, mostly the Bible professors bristled, you know, when people came late to their class, but the Rav always finished late because he was, you know, involved in the sugya and he didn't want to leave it. He almost couldn't leave it. That's an interesting phenomenon too. And therefore he went late and some of the professors were, you know, very makbid. But, you know, most of the people in the Rav Shir took a Bible or really Tanakh with Dr. Meir Hershkowitz. When we would walk in late from the Rav Shir, he would beam, you know, and he would consider it a great honor, you know, that people came late to his class because, you know, they spent a little more time, you know, with Rav. So my father felt not that the comparison is full in all ways, but the idea that what he was teaching was consistent with and, you know, holistically, you know, part of what was being done in the yeshiva, you know, in the morning, you know, and that if people came late for that, and it wasn't just out of laziness or lack of respect, but it was really because they were eager to, you know, to finish a topic and it was part of their passion for learning. That was something that he respected a great deal. So in terms of, you know, my father really was my first Rebbe in that respect, not so much formally. I mean, again, I would say very, very formatively, especially so my father was very busy during the year. He was a very active Rav in the Kehillah, even before he was teaching. You know, his Rabbanus was always very immersive. He took it also very seriously. And he was involved with the tzibur and his, you know, own shiurim that he was giving and drashos, and but especially, you know, pastorally with people. And during the year, he didn't really have, you know, that much time formally for, you know, for siddurim, you know, with his children. But we grew up in a home which was permeated with, you know, ambition and the aspiration of Talmud Torah. My father was a very close Talmud of the Rav. That was something which defined his self-image. He considered it to be, you know, one of the, you know, highlights of his life, and not in the past term, because he was, you know, all the years he was close to the Rav, and he kept that relationship with the Rav reciprocated. He, there were certain of the Rabbanim, my father included, that he trusted. He knew they weren't out to, you know, exploit him, or, you know, that their relationship was just not a casual one. He knew that there were certain Rabbanim whose devotion to him and whose devotion to what it is that he was trying to accomplish, you know, in difficult circumstances, you know, in the Golus of America, was absolute. And my father was one of those Rabbanim, together with a bunch of other, Rabbi Wurzberger and Rabbi Schoenfeld. And I don't want to mention, I can mention other names, but Rabbi Roth and Rabbi, you know, Rabbi Lamb. But there was a group of that, you know, who studied with him and remained very devoted to him. And that was something that defined my father's, you know, religious worldview, being a Talmud of the Rav. And, you know, from a very young age, you know, there was a certain osmosis. I didn't know who the Rav was until I think the first time I saw the Rav, I must have been 15, 14, 15. I went to a lecture in that he gave around Purim time. He used to give, you know, the Yahrzeit Shir in memory of his brother and his mother and his wife. That was like all around the same period of time around Purim. So I went to, you know, one of those public lectures. I think I must have been 14 or so or 15. But before that, I never personally met the Rav, but growing up as a little boy in our home, you know, we knew there was this person called Rav Soloveitchik. My father called him the Rav. He was the ultimate authority in things. He was the one who, you know, you looked up to. If my father had issues that he needed to discuss, you know, that's where he would go to Boston or he would call. And that had tremendous impact on me and my siblings in terms of the concept of authority and hierarchy and what it is that's really, you know, at the zenith of religious life and experience. So I think even, you know, more than like, you know, particularly sitting down and learning that too, but aside, in addition to that, just that sense of, you know, what is important, you know, who do we turn to, what do we aspire to, the idea of Talmud Torah on a very high level. This was something that we grew up with. In the summers, my father always made time, you know, for actual, you know, sitting and learning. And that was a very important experience for me too. He was a good pedagogue, you know, in terms of the beginning of things, certainly how to read, how to think. But mostly those were summers when I was younger. I learned a lot from my father as a, you know, as a shomea, you know, the kachav. I always, like I said, used to say facetiously, I still say it, now more nostalgically, but I used to say to him that I was his longest standing congregant, you know. When we were growing up, my father didn't insist, but it was understood that we you know, didn't leave, you know, during the drasha. And we typically stayed for, you know, other shiurim, like, you know, between Mincha Ma'ariv and so on. So I really heard a lot growing up, you know, from my father. Not so much Gemara shiurim, but, you know, Divrei Hashkafa and things from Alana. My father had a very good eye. He was always very well prepared. His material was always excellent. And that inspired me a lot, you know, at a young age. Particularly, I would say, inspirational and instrumental for me, whilst also being exposed to Shabbos HaGadol and Shabbos Shuva drashas, which were, you know, my father worked very hard on those. I wouldn't say that they were original compositions, but, you know, combining from different things, but on a very high level. To me, that exposure to Talmud Torah on analytical Talmud Torah on a very high level, you know, whether it was something from the Rav or Chaim or something from the Avni Nezer, my father's background was originally in Toronto, Polish Toronto, as he used to say, and from particularly Yeshivas Torah Chaim, which was headed by Rav Avram Aaron Price, who was a big gadol in his own right, and who wrote many massive svarim called Mishnas Avram. And he was a, as a little boy, he knew and was considered a prodigy already by the Avni Nezer, and that was his derech. So my father really grew up in the Polish, you know, derech, and he loved that all his life. He liked Tzfas Emes, he liked Ger, he liked Kotsk. You know, that all comes from that kufa. But in terms of learning, you know, it was the Avni Nezer. And then, of course, when he went to YU, you know, it became, as a Talmud of the Rav, it became brisk. So the Shabbos Shuvah and Shabbos HaGadol drashos were always meticulously prepared and, you know, excellent material. And as I remember as a young boy, being very inspired and very excited, you know, by that way of thinking and then having a tremendous hashpa on me. If I wasn't able to do that, obviously, at age, whatever it was, but, you know, it, you know, represented a level and again, something to aspire to and to be ambitious about. And between that and summers and, you know, many, many years of hearing good drashas and good shiurim and chumash and in Pirkei Avos, et cetera, you know, that was a huge hashpa. I mean, certainly in terms of what I was interested in, my way of thinking, et cetera. And then, of course, together with excellent rabbeim that I had, not so many, but the ones that I had, which were very impactful, you know, in formative years. And again, both as role models and in terms of Derech HaLimud and Derech HaChashiva, a way of thinking, these were all elements, you know, that you know, that went into, you know, an extension of the home experience. But I think if it wasn't for the foundation of, you know, what was, you know, imbued, you know, in a very natural way in terms of, you know, what, you know, we aspire towards, that I wouldn't have been able to capitalize in the same way, even on the later influences. So I give a lot of credit to both my parents, not only my father, my mother. My mother's from a mishpacha miyucheset of Rabbanim. And that was also something which in her demeanor and her self-image, you know, was very important. And even though she wasn't herself a melumedes, she was a very educated person and an extremely wise person, a special person. She was secularly very well educated and very insightful person. She grew up at a time when women's education, Torah learning was very, you know, limited. And, you know, she, you know, was always, you know, regretful that she didn't really have certain of the opportunities that, you know, that were available later to her, you know, to her children and grandchildren. But again, in terms of the image of what's important and who do we look up to and, you know, what do we try to achieve in life, my mother, together with my father, and especially from the background that she came from, was a critical influence. And my father had great pride in my mother's yichus. My father himself was very much a self-made person. He really came from a very simple family, but at a very young age, he always used to tell me he doesn't really know where it came from, but somehow he attached himself to, again, the Polish Frum community in Toronto, the Chevre Shas and others, and he just pushed himself kind of into Cheder and then Yeshiva, and later into YU. He just had an instinct that this is what he wanted to be, and that's a very remarkable thing.
I guess work off of partially what Rebbe just spoke about. I've always been struck how, again, for lack of a better way of saying it, in so many ways, Rebbe is a homegrown product of our community, having spent really one's formative years pretty much exclusively between Yeshivat Har Etzion and then in YU within our community, however one defines it. And there are certainly a lot of advantages to growing up in a home where the Rav plays such a dominant role and being part of a particular system as far as it encouraging development of certain hashkafas, a certain sense of tradition and mesorah, furthering certain kinds of methodologies and approaches to learning. I guess to shift gears for a moment, did Rebbe ever consider, or looking back, are there any, I guess, regrets of not spending any more time, even for a zman, in a different yeshiva, maybe one that is, I guess, part of one would call the broader, I guess, Olam HaYeshivos, to spend time getting exposure in a different way, with different perspectives? Was that ever something which, I guess, if Rebbe was going back, would there be like a temptation to spend zman in a different yeshiva to see what that's like, or not? And I guess I would love to hear any perspectives on that.
I don't think there's a yes and no answer to that question. But what I will say is, I do think it's very important for people to be, to make choices and to be exposed, to within Eilu Ve'ilu Divrei Elokim Chayim, obviously within traditional bounds, different masoros. I do think that I have a pretty good exposure to what's out there. I think I've pretty much, always had. It's true that I grew up, very definitively in a certain kind of framework. But through intellectual curiosity, and again, the people that I look to, including my father and including my rabbeim, who had intellectual curiosity in addition to other great qualities, and who were quite aware of, other methodologies and other approaches, whether they be, in halacha or lamdas or hashkafa. As I say, being blessed with plenty of curiosity, certainly, I always had that and I always pursued it. So I don't feel that, I missed out terribly, frankly. I visited many other yeshivot. I've kind of read quite a bit. The details are not really so important. I do think, so what I'm trying to say is that, everybody's path is different and the opportunities at the time are different. And, there are always trade-offs and decisions that you make. In retrospect, I'm quite happy that, since the age of 16, basically, I've had, two rabbeim, Rav Lichtenstein, Zecharno Livracha, and the Rav Zecharno Livracha. And, I think the time that I spent with both, were tremendously impactful, transformative, in my life. And I wouldn't want to have given up those, years. If I felt that the result of that was I never really gave a fair hearing, or I don't know what's out there, I might didn't have really choices, then probably I'd feel differently about it. But in retrospect, I don't have, regrets. But I do think that for Talmidim who are listening, because that this is the goal, that the idea of knowing what else there is, being exposed, making conscious choices, I think that's important. And I think there is need for an exposure, whether it's through reading or spending time. For some people, spending some time in other yeshivot is a good idea. I've had many Talmidim have asked me that over the years. They want to go to Mir for a semester. They want to go to Lakewood. They want to go wherever they want to go. Maybe they want to go to the Avnei Nezer, Yeshiva, whatever it is. Mostly, I am encouraging, as long as people think that, you know, they're weighing really, you know, the real issues. I always like to quote the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. You know, it speaks about multiple influences and distinguishes between Girsa and Svara. I think it's important to develop a derech, and to do that, I think you can't flit around, you know, from place to place to place to place. And it's also important to know, you know, what the drachim are out there, so that you can make a conscious and intelligent decision, and also so that your own nofech mishalcha, even if it's, you know, developed on the basis of impact from a particular style or rebbe or, you know, school, etc., you know, also has the ability to incorporate other things based on your own inclination and your own experiences, but also based on an awareness of some of the, you know, alternatives, you know, that are within the pale and that can, you know, immeasurably impact. I do think, you know, that I've been able to, been exposed to different things that I admire, and that I've tried to consciously or unconsciously, certainly unconsciously, that they've been incorporated, you know, in things that I do. And so I don't have regrets, but I do think that the principle, which is the premise of your question, is a correct one, namely that there should be exposure, there should be awareness, there should be, you know, some sort of, you know, cross currents, you know, impact in a person's development. Okay. Feel free to follow up if I didn't answer fully.
Well, maybe we'll shift for a minute. Rebbe's often looked upon by so many Talmidim and by elements of the broader community to voice an opinion and to share insight on contemporary issues, be that questions of racism, women's issues, so many topics where our community is looking for rabbinic guidance. And so many Talmidim that are also looking in particular for Rebbe's perspective. I know that in the past, when there were certain questions that came up, that Rav Lichtenstein was a voice and a person that at times, I believe, Rebbe, you know, consulted with or asked questions as far as his own take on particular issues. With the passing of Rav Lichtenstein, are there contemporary rabbinic voices that Rebbe also enjoys either consulting with that carry a degree of weight? Is it primarily almost like one's own learning, one's sense of allegiance to a Mesorah that comes by way of Salvechik and of Lichtenstein, which informs, and others, which informs and impacts his own perspective? So I guess to what extent are there contemporary voices, colleagues or others that play a role? Or again, is it more of an embracing and an understanding of primary sources and a particular very strong and dominant Mesorah, which Rebbe has been able to receive?
In a way, there's a relationship between the previous question and the present question, clearly. And again, I think it is important to you know, to widen one's exposures and to understand that there are different perspectives on certain issues. Also to be able to weigh the value of different perspectives and to be able to develop a mechanism, you know, to choose your own path. The fortunate or unfortunate, you know, dialectic, it's both, of having, you know, really outstanding, you know, role models and Rabbeim, Chachmei HaMesorah, is that, you know, they're not easily replaced. So, you know, it's Baruch Hashem. Since the age of 16, I said I've had two primary Rabbeim. And, you know, both of them are, you know, world class, more, you know, intergenerational, you know, people who you know, really had a special way of looking at the world, you know, through the prism and the lens of halakha, and also through their own, you know, knowledge and their own sensitivity. And, you know, when such a person passes from the scene, you don't just, you know, find somebody to, that doesn't mean you don't consult with people. I have very close relationships with colleagues or, you know, in the yeshiva in particular, and, you know, depending on the issue, I've been very involved with many of them and some of the trying to hammer out, or, you know, especially in, within the yeshiva's policy, but even in other issues, to try to be constructive in addressing, you know, some complicated circumstances. You mentioned, you know, involvement in the, you know, gender issues. You know, I was involved with the OU, but too with some other rabbanim as well, with some of the other Rosh Yeshiva in the yeshiva. And over the years, the yeshiva issues, you know, we always try to work, you know, in a collegial way. Certainly it all begins with an exchange, a respectful exchange of opinions, and hopefully mutual influence as well. And there are other rabbanim, you know, depending on what the issue is, as well, you know, to speak to. But on some of these very thorny questions, you know, where a very distinctive kind of more complex approach is required, it's, you know, you don't just, you know, as I say, substitute, you know, not for the Rav and not for Rav Lichtenstein. And that's, you know, I guess the downside of having been not spoiled, really. I'm just using that as, I don't really mean it. You know, having had the opportunity to be in the mechitzatam of such great people. But the other side of the dialectic is, you know, that while you can't, you know, assume this from an authority point of view, especially when we're talking about new issues, from a inspirational, you know, point of view, and often then that can carry a lot of conviction depending on the topic. The idea of sif soseim dovos bekever, the idea that the Mesorah, as you know, very articulately put it before, is something that continues, and, you know, you continue to draw from, and you can feel confident about that. Not confident that you get the single right answer, especially when there are thorny questions where either are no good answers or no perfect answers, where, you know, there are anomalies and you're trying to address them, and, you know, there are pressures and counter pressures, and it's an unhappy, you know, kind of situation and choice. So, you know, you don't sleep well at night, and you do the best you can, and you think it over again and again and again and again. But at least you can have the advantage of, you know, being inspired by and influenced by people who had that kind of, you know, breadth and depth and consistency, is that, you know, if you do, you know, feel that you, you know, were accurately, you know, influenced by them, you know, then, you know, that continues. And that always provides a foundation, you know, not to the exclusion of also consultation with other people, you know, anybody who's not arrogant, and anybody who, you know, is searching and seeking, you know, to, you know, to do good in situations where, you know, there's bound to be, you know, a downside, you know, no matter what decision that you make, you know, is going to consult with other people, frankly. But if it's a very, very, you know, complex issue, and one which requires a lot of sophistication and so on, it's just not easy. It's not like, oh, you'll open up the Shulchan Aruch and you'll find the answer explicitly, or you'll call up an expert and, you know, the super expert in, you know, in Hilchas Erevin, and, you know, he'll give you the benefit. These are, you're talking about very, you know, overlapping topics and choices, and, you know, oftentimes, Eis Lasos Hashem Et Feir Torah Secha, but you have to try to do the best you can. You know, Yiftach Bedoro Kishmul Bedoro. We also believe Lo Alman Yisrael. So when great people leave the scene, you know, I always give the example of the, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, because he was the first and he was the greatest and he was the most irreplaceable. And therefore the trauma, you know, after he, you know, left the scene was the greatest. And yet, you know, that's when, you know, that's when the concept of Chachmei HaMesorah really took off, with the recognition, you know, that you want to reconstruct and you want to be in the spirit, and, you know, and yet you have to move forward. So that's been, you know, the case. If you read literature of, you know, these kind of things, every generation, you know, there's certain themes that are recurring. And one of them, of course, is the sense of profound loss and being lost, you know, when people that you look to for guidance and authority and wisdom, you know, especially, you know, complex wisdom, you know, are no longer present. And, you know, what are we going to do? And, you know, the sense of being, you know, inadequate. You know, these are, it's part of, you know, that's part of the Masorah, frankly. We have a Masorah in that. But in the end of the day, you know, you have to do the best you can and try to do it with integrity. And if you can't speak authoritatively in the name of, you know, the people that you, you know, look to and continue to respect and who are a living presence for you, because sometimes that's not fair if it's an issue that they really, you know, haven't specifically addressed, but you still can, cultivate a very strong conviction, you know, that you are being consistent and you're acting with integrity, you know, to that Masorah. So it's important to, you know, represent it accurately, but it's still a very powerful thing.
I guess shifting gears from Rebbe as a Talmud to as a Rebbe, I remember the first conversation I think I ever had. I'm sure it was probably more memorable for me, was when I first joined the Shir and started YU. And I was talking about my schedule and you know who I was learning with throughout the day. And I had mentioned that at night I was learning with a particular Talmud of Rebbe's who had been in Shir for a while. And I was struck at the at how positive Rebbe was in talking about him and the pride in which he took. And over the years, I mentioned this even to my Shir a couple of weeks ago, how one of the things which has always struck me in both in public forums and also in private conversations over the years is the enormous amount of pride that Rebbe seems to have in so many of his Talmidim who Baruch Hashem are being Marbitz Torah and are in other ways also as playing roles in the community are doing such wonderful things. I guess I would love to come back later to part of what I guess what generates that pride and the uniqueness of the Talmidim in YU. But I guess on the flip side, is there ever a sense of disappointment, I guess, in Talmidim? And what would that look like? Just hearing so much of the, I guess, what would it take for that? I've heard so much of the overwhelming pride, which is such a source of chizuk. But I guess shifting to the direction, is there ever like a sense of, or what does it take? I mean, what struck me then and continues to is that those Talmidim that Rebbe has praised have not always been exactly the same. Different styles of learning, different styles of hashkafa. You know, the Vehemidu Talmidim Harbe, which Rebbe speaks about sometimes, of Talmidim that are standing on their own also. I guess, is there ever that sense of, in the context of all of those, of any disappointment? And what would that look like?
Well, I think there can't be, you know, if there's only great pride and you know, a nachas, no matter what, you know, then probably the great pride and the nachas is compromised, you know, as well, you know, for it to be real and authentic. And I appreciate you, you know, saying so. And it definitely is something that I feel very strongly. But for in order for it to be authentic and real, you know, it has to include the potential for disappointment. Thankfully, I think that's been rare. But, you know, basically it's, you know, the Talmud-Rebbe relationship, as we know, is Vishinanta Levanecha. You know, it's like a parental relationship. And it's built on, you know, shared experiences, which are cherished and valued, you know, just like a parental relationship is. You know, but of course, with the different dynamic in terms of age and in terms of the, you know, the content. But for the just as a parental relationship, you know, is so acute. You know, it's acute in the pride, and it's acute, you know, occasionally, again, Baruch Hashem, I haven't experienced this then on a parental level. But, you know, we know in the world that it can, you know, it can be very devastating when somebody who's close to you, you feel that you have invested in them. They feel that you have, you know, exposed, you know, the, you know, yourself, your innermost private, you know, persona, you know, to them, you know, occasionally, yet, you know, it backfires. And that's, of course, very disappointing. That's true in a parental relationship, in theory. Again, Baruch Hashem, I have never experienced that. But that's a blessing. Sometimes you can do everything right and you can still experience that. And it's obviously has to be true, you know, if it's not a peripheral relationship, you know, for Vishinanta Levanecha as well. And for the exact same reason. Again, there's a sense that, you know, what you're bonding over is, you know, Dvar Ma'omd in Berumo Shalolam and Dvar Hashem, which is, you know, the Achtuta Maskil, the Hamuskal. And that, you know, ironing out the sugyas and the wrinkles, which was really trying to understand that Dvar Hashem in a better, more accurate, more sophisticated, more meaningful, spiritually meaningful kind of a way. You know, putting tremendous effort into that is important. And you're trying to transmit a methodology, tools. You're trying to admit an appreciation for, you know, what's singular, what's authentic, you know, what it is to be, what it is that is to be cherished, you know, in that process. So in theory, you know, when it's fine for people to, you know, develop differently, as you know, as you say, you know, as long as it's all within, you know, the framework of Elu Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chayim and the Mesorah and so on, you know, that's everybody's nofech mishalo is fine, and some are more radical than others. But, you know, as long as people are sincere and they're, you know, pursuing, you know, respectfully and with reverence and according to honest and authentic traditional, you know, modes of learning and thinking and psak and hashkafa, you know, there's a lot to be proud of, even if people aren't, you know, even if you have some misgivings, frankly, you know, in terms of, you know, emphasis and other things. And I have that of some Talmidim who I like very much. I have great affection for them. I even have pride in their accomplishments, you know, but obviously I've had many over the years and, you know, some I, in terms of what they are actually, what makes them unique in their perspective, some I endorse, you know, more than others. Although in many cases I endorse very significantly, but it can happen, obviously, that you pour your heart and soul and you try to, you know, transmit and convey your sense of reverence and pride in the Mesorah and your sense of, you know, what integrity is. And, you know, it just doesn't, you know, work out. And, you know, you have people who go in a different direction. That can be a source of devastating disappointment. And again, if you didn't have it, you know, the wish is never to have it. I can't say that I've never had it. It wouldn't be true. I've had it very rarely. I think that if you never have it or never could have it, no matter what, as I say, that would necessarily, in the same way, you know, as a parental relationship, that would necessarily reflect that the depth of your pride is also probably something to re-examine. I'm not sure if I fully answered you or not. But
yeah, no, it's great. I guess I commented to a friend that there's something very odd about interviewing Rebbe in a context like this, because the context is not really focused on classic, I guess, rigorous Talmud Torah. And to spend an hour or so and avoid questions like that is something which is, I guess, a little bit uncomfortable and not always in line with everything that what Rebbe's the model of.
These are meta halachic questions.
So
meta,
I guess I'll shift
questions. They're fine.
Okay, yeah. So maybe I'm going to go a little bit beyond that in a different direction. I remember it's been very impressive. I know for me, I've been struck by the phenomenon as a parent, even more so, of the ability to have banim who are also talmidim, mm-hmm. and to be able to build those kinds of relationships. I remember, I think Rav Lichtenstein once gave a sicha speaking about the joy and pleasure of parenting. At times, I think, you know, going bike riding with his children and things like that. As part of Rebbe's chinuch with his children, was there a fun component? Were there things that Rebbe did with them really just not in the narrow sense related to Torah or Avodas Hashem more broadly speaking, but just to insert a degree of relationship building, again, fun, for lack of a better way of saying it?
The question is, was there anything but fun? No, I'm a very big believer that a person should be real, also for with their talmidim, frankly. But I think that, you know, parenting requires, you know, being very genuine and understanding that, you know, a family, you know, has wide meaning and a wide range of, components. No, we were very, as parents, very involved in our children on all different levels. I don't know how much bike riding Rav Lichtenstein did with his children, but I can't imagine that he did as much as I have. we try to build children who are, wide-ranging and you know, well-balanced, and, you know, we've encouraged them, you know, in their social interactions and in their, you know, pleasures and hobbies. And, you know, it's Chanoch Lanar al Pidarko. Also, you have to try to understand who your children are. But, and certainly there's been a lot of learning and, formal learning and informal learning. But along with that, certainly we've tried a very balanced family life, which includes joy and, you know, humor, I hope, and recreational things. And, you have to check with the children if you want the details. But it's something that I think, as a matter of principle, is very important. I think it's also very important to learn with your children and, you know, in everything that you do to, again, like you're telling them, to imbue, you know, what you do with a sense of priorities and hierarchies and, you know, the importance of your shemayim and, you know, in your language and in the activities that you encourage, etc. But within all that, the idea of doing that with, you know, a whole range and a spectrum of life and activities, and to encourage and to try to really find, you know, the Chanoch Lanar al Pidarko of your children, I think is a very important thing. I think it's important for everyone to do. I'm very much a believer in what I call concentric circles. But I think that Vishinanta Levanecha, you know, was chosen, Banecha, Talmidecha, you know, also so that you know that, you know, you shouldn't neglect your children, you know, even if you're in the Avodas HaKodesh sphere, whether it's Rabbanus or Chinuch. Again, I don't think my parents neglected us. I think my father was a very dedicated, you know, community rabbi. And, you know, in general, and even beyond the community, and my mother and the things that she did. But we always had a sense that we took priority. And that's something which we've tried to transmit, my wife and I, to our children as well. That's part of Vishinanta Levanecha. If you're not, you know, a good father to your children, you know, and especially if it's in the name of being a good Rebbe to your Talmidim or a good rabbi to your community, I think that eventually that inconsistency catches up with you. And it's not just the priority; it's also just a bad investment, even if your goal ultimately is the Avodas HaKodesh one. So I think, you know, you have to do things with integrity, and that begins, you know, with your, you know, most personal relationships. And I don't think it's coincidence that in halachic terms that, we zero in on those things, whether linguistically and otherwise, the family unit, whether it's in tzedakah, or dodo ben dodo yigalenu, or, achicha, and what it's used for. So of course the idea is to expand that. But the idea of expanding it, first assumes dealing with integrity, with the primary categories. And I think that that is true with one's, spousal relationship, and that is true with one's children and parents' relationship, and so on. And I think from an investment point of view, in addition to just being the right thing to do, that's always the best, tack and tactic. So yes, I do think that a person, should invest a lot. And we did a lot of family trips. We did, children read books. I read the books. My wife read the books they read. So we would, first of all, it's important to know what they read. Second, some of their books are more interesting than the adult books. But as part of, understanding, and that's part of communication and joy. So I think those things are very important.
I think we have time for one final question, as it's, I guess, getting late in New York and not as early here. What does Rebbe enjoy, or what is Rebbe impressed by in his own Talmidim? We spoke earlier about the pride. What strikes Rebbe about the Talmidim, and I guess the joy of teaching in YU? And I guess along those lines, just to add in, I guess, has there been a change at all over the years in the people that Rebbe is teaching? Has there been any shift? There's certainly a lot of discussion out there, how people talk as if there is a lot. I don't know if that's always, I wonder sometimes that's an overstatement more than anything else. I guess I would love to hear.
Right. I mean, you're talking about in terms of the level or the
level, motivation, just personality style.
Certainly conventional wisdom. I've been very blessed to have amazing Talmidim, and I hope it continues. It's been very something which I have great, hakaras hatov for. But I've only from the very beginning had motivated Talmidim who were capable. Again, obviously, everybody has different levels of capability and, where have they been, what have they done, et cetera. But in terms of being interested, having attention spans, being able to put in the investment and effort into high-level Talmud Torah, preparing, working, on the language, on the texts, thinking about them, doing proper chazara, having the mental energy to think about the nuances. I know that that's not something to take for granted. I've been hearing it, I could say decades, but it doesn't seem decades to me, but for decades I've been hearing it. From the very beginning, frankly, I was told, you should lower your expectations and your standards, and you're not going to find, Talmidim always who are going to be capable of, interested in, putting in that kind of an effort, and you have to, you have to pepper whatever you do with all sorts of other mechanisms and stories and this and that. I mean, whether it's an adult education, but of course we're primarily focused now on the yeshiva. I found all of that, Baruch Hashem, not to have been the case. From the very beginning, I've been able to demand a lot. And, the first year I taught, I gave a chabura to a larger group, but I also had, but my regular shiur was about eight Talmidim, half of whom are still very close to me today. And the others, when I see, it's we have a lot of nostalgic and good memories. From the very beginning, I've been, I've been just blessed with being able to, do what I wanted to do on the level that I want. And there is real joy in experiencing people's growth, you know, in the intellectual parts of Talmud Torah for sure. But if it were just the intellectual parts, it wouldn't account for the level of investment and energy and immersion. So to me, it's just very, you know, there's, again, it's the bonding that takes place. Well, that's, I think, what Vishinanta the Vanacha really is. You know, like somebody from the outside, you know, would be puzzled, you know, about the excitement that is generated by the nuanced differences, you know, of how we're, is it this or is it that, you know, in the Rambam Lishitaso, and the, how does this topic fit in and interlock with that topic, etc. But, you know, if you can really convey to Talmidim that this is Dvar Hashem and these are values and that, like, this is exciting, intellectually exciting for sure, but, you know, there are other intellectually exciting things in the world, I'm sure. Probably it's the most intellectually exciting because it's also Dvar Hashem, and it's the most important thing. So feeling that and feeling that that's being transmitted and that is shared, not transmitted like, you know, indoctrinated, Chalila, but that really shared by, you know, and the same kind of energy and you know, the suggestions that people have. And they're good suggestions, or often they're excellent, but sometimes they're not, but it doesn't matter. The mental energy and the effort and the, you know, what it reflects about, you know, that sense of bonding over, and therefore the significance of the material that you're bonding over, you know, itself implicitly, whether people can articulate or not. I find that to be a very rewarding, exciting thing. And I you know, you identify with people who, you know, who can muster that kind of understanding of what's important, and who are capable of that level of immersion in what you think is the most important thing in the world. And that is attaching yourself to purpose and values and Dvar Hashem, frankly. So I've been enormously blessed, you know, to be able to do that from the very beginning. I've never had a situation where I've found, you know, we're talking about coming a little bit, you know, after three to my father's class, but, you know, again, that's, you know, something that never is planned, but it happens a lot. It's an overflow of enthusiasm. And it's not just me, it's from the Talmidim as well. I remember, you know, being in the Rav Shir once, more than once, you know, and the Rav kind of losing his temper because he was sitting there trying to figure something out. And, you know, the time was going on. He took much longer even than I do in the Shir. And then, like, he, you know, turning to the Talmidim at one point, and, like, you know, with this look of, like, puzzlement, like, in which he said something like, I don't understand why, you know, you could all just walk away from this problem. You know, I'm trying to work it out. And you're, like, impatient, you know. And, of course, you know, we understand both sides. But I thought that was, like, for me, a very enlightening, you know, moment about the personalization of the process. And I think, you know, I feel that with a lot of my Talmidim, that they have that too. Doesn't mean you have to go over time, but I've never encountered the short attention span thing. If it really is a function of the internet and it's physiological, then I don't understand why this, my Talmidim don't seem to have it, which is why I tend to dismiss that theory. I think if you demand of people, not demand, but meaning you invest, you know, and you know, you expose them to something that is authentic and that is valuable beyond measure, that they will respond. And, you know, mostly that's been the case, and I find that, you know, amazing and inspirational and a basis for bonding, you know, and for admiration. So I'm not sure if I'm answering you completely, but I don't find the Talmidim are, you know, people like, you know, people from years past, I look at the Bechina, they say, oh, the Bechina is a little different now. It's this, that. I don't chalk that up at all to level or being less demanding. I mean, you know, people panic in the Bechina. They don't panic in Bechina. Bechinas are Bechinas. I have not found at all that that the effort, that the quality, that the aptitude of Talmidim in our day you know, is inferior. I do know that in the world of education, that that's an assumption that's being made. I'm sure it's not being made for no reason, and I think it needs to be responsibly addressed if, in fact, you know, that, you know, that is the reality. But I do know that it doesn't have to be that way, and therefore I'm extremely concerned, although we're not talking about the educational side of this, that, you know, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy and that people are giving in too easily. And I think, you know, it's particularly disturbing that that should take place in the context of Talmud Torah. I don't think we have the right to be mochel on that kind of thing. That doesn't mean we should be realistic, but we should be really realistic with an eye towards upgrading, you know, people's level and not, you know, being resigned, you know, to, you know, to less or to the more mediocre. Again, if people need to make, you know, changes, you know, in how they present, or that's all fine. I don't have any difficulty with that. Things don't need to be exactly as they always were. But the idea of Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam and the role that it plays, and that it requires enormous commitment and energy and vitality and so on, that's you know, that's a you know, universal halachic norm. That's not, you know, negotiable. And if there's a problem with that, then I think we need to figure out ways, you know, to return to that or to intensify that. But it should not be something that we, you know, feel that we have the right to concede. So what you're detecting, I guess, or as my pride in Talmidim, is very much a function of that, the fact that they, in the best way, you know, the Havayas, the Abaye, Barav are treated with reverence, and they're treated, you know, as the, you know, the remarkable thing that they are, you know, Devar Hashem. And I find that to be very exciting and inspiring.
I guess just to end, first of all, thank you again to Rabbi Bacon for organizing and putting it together, and for allowing me the great pleasure of being able to interview Rosenzweig, and such a really just to thank Rebbe so much on behalf of all of the Talmidim that are listening now and that are here, just the opportunity to hear words of insight, perspectives that are relevant, and to it's a great honor to view oneself on some level as a Talmud, and with all of the feeling sometimes, to use a word that Rebbe used before, of being spoiled, and to feel at the same time that it comes with a certain need for rigor and ambition, and to be excited about that challenge is something which is really so special. And I really just thank Rebbe so much for the opportunity. It's been such a pleasure. And again, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you. And, you know, if people want an example of why it is that I have pride in Talmidim, you know, you're one of the people they can look at. So
thank you. Thank you very much.